Don't mind me. I was just eating crackers, waiting for your arrival.
Listen, take your lunch break. I know you're going from work to play.
I'm off today, but I was shopping, which is work in itself. And I had to rush home for this. But if Isabel Sanford can be eating cheese when she accepted her Emmy, I think I can have crackers on my podcast. Hello and welcome to So Good We Named It, the first Golden Girls and Golden Palace podcast with Black host, I guess, because I don't know where Kay is. I'm so glad we scheduled this around her. But, as seen on Yahoo, the Associated Press, USA Today, the Judge Mathis Show, Golden Con 2022, Golden Con 2023, and soon to be the Golden Girls Kitchen, this is So Good We Named It, featuring apparently just me. But hello, Michelle, and now that I'm seeing you, I realize I've interacted with you on Facebook. I didn't realize that you were the same person, so I'm glad to see. That happens a lot. Like at Golden Con, I was meeting people. I'm like, oh, wait, I know you. I know your face. Welcome. And I love that chair. I might need that. You say you're in Chicago, so I may be swinging by. I don't know if it's for sale or, you know, you want to gift it. The Addams Family chair is what I'm looking at for those that can't see. Like the big wicker chair that everyone had back in like the 80s and 90s. I've always wanted one. But hello and welcome. And You let me know that your project is still under wraps, so I won't be saying what it is, but it's Golden Girls related, everyone, which is why I initially reached out, but it's far too exclusive for you all to know just yet. But what can you share with us?
Tip top secret. I am happy to loan you this chair anytime you like.
Loan, give, whatever, you know.
I did meet you at Golden Con. I remember, actually, your booth was so fun because you had vintage clothing. That was like the beeline. That was the first place I was going, was to find all these fun Golden Girls, you know, a little Alfred Dunner, a little flower dress. I got my entire summer wardrobe at your booth.
Well, I'm glad that someone enjoyed it and appreciated it, since most people had blinders on when they passed by. I've met a lot of people that I don't remember or forgot that I met, so hopefully you don't take it personally. Happens a lot. I don't know why, because can never remember anything ever. I don't know. Maybe I should talk to somebody about that. But I do remember meeting I don't know if that was your assistant or just a friend that made me reach out to you because they gave me a pin in referencing your special project. And I was like, oh, I gotta find out who this person is. Did we have like a full conversation and I just blanked it out of my head? Or was it just like, oh, hi, goodbye?
Well, you were running around, so it's totally cool that you are a little blurry. Conventions are like that. You know, you spend 2-3 days and it's like, in the moment, it's very, I'm right here. But 3 days later, your brain is just fuzzy. Washed.
Very much so. When it's so much happening and you're not stationary. I'm a little better in everyday life, but even then, I had a friend that had a friend of theirs that would come to stuff, and on like the fourth time, like, oh, nice to meet you. They're like, we have met many, many times. So maybe I just need some, is it ginkgo that you need? Maybe I need some of that.
You know what I use? This is my bev of choice. The Rockstar, the diet Rockstar. Oh. Keeps your brain real sharp.
Yes, I'll have to try that. I was afraid to have energy drinks once I started a medication. They were like, oh, you'll have a heart attack. So I was like, oh, that seems extreme. But then I asked a pharmacist and they're like, yeah, that's not unless you're like downing them nonstop, then perhaps yes. So I might have to add that to my list. But aside from your top secret project that we can't discuss, there were some other things Golden Girls related that you had in mind. So feel free to share with the class so we can get into it.
Sure. What I can say is that I'm a writer in real life and also on this Golden Girls project. This is kind of a special aside. Usually I write for the tech industry, healthcare, things that are kind of corporate. Mm. But this special project is Golden Girls related. And what I am loving about it is that everyone, I mean, top to bottom, everyone I talk to knows about the Golden Girls. You know, it's just very relatable and people get it right away, which is not, you know, when I say, oh, I write about MSPs for blah, 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 blah. People just glaze over. But when I say Golden Girls, people go, I used to watch that show with my grandma. I used to watch that show, you know. How did you start watching the Golden Girls?
I feel bad because everybody has this like super sentimental story of, oh, I was in the nursing home and as she took her last breath, she said, turn on the Golden Girls. As for me, I just love watching TV and I used to watch a lot of Nick at Night and I would watch Mama's Family. So when I saw Ellen and Aunt Fran, I was like, ooh, what is this? What is, you know, that drew me in because it was on six times a day on Lifetime Television for Women. And that was what initially made me want to watch it. And then, of course, I just got sucked in because it was hilarious and on constantly. But I feel like I'm the only person that says, oh, Mama's Family, that's what brought me in there. But, you know, that's what it was. I didn't watch it with my grandmother, my mother, none of that. It was just little old me.
Just quality TV, which is what it is. I thought it was really interesting. So at Golden Con, I spent a lot of time talking to the writers, you know, because I'm a writer. I like to talk to other, you know, and writing is such a solitary exercise for the most part. You know, it really can be, you know, it's a lot of staring at the wall. I wish it was a lot more typing, but it really is a lot of thinking, processing, whatever. So to be able to talk to real working writers, like I see that you have Sean Sheps on your podcast. Yes. Maybe that will have aired by the time this one does, but I'm so excited to listen to that one because she was really helpful for me at Golden Con. I mean, really took time to visit about what goes on in a writer's room and what goes on and why the Golden Girls, I think, remains popular and why you would be attracted to it just as a watcher, hearing people talk about how long they would take to get a joke right. You know, they would take hours writing the right punchline for the right joke. And I think that it shows in how much the show has held up. You know, this is not, oh, it was funny in the moment. And I mean, obviously some things have not aged well, you know, was at a certain time. But for the most part, the jokes are very funny, like really sharp and funny. And I don't think it's an accident. I think they really pushed and pushed and pushed to make it as good as they could. So what I was hoping we could talk about today is one of my favorite Golden Girls writers. Her name is Winifred Hervey, and she wrote on the first, mostly the first three seasons, a little bit on the fourth. And I spent a little time recently watching all of her episodes, and she, I mean, now that I'm watching episodes she didn't write, I'm realizing how funny she in particular was. I mean, they are tight from top to bottom. And she writes some of my favorite jokes. Like, remember when Blanche is like, people in the South mature faster. I think it's the heat. And Dorothy goes, I think it's the gin. You know, just, I mean, funny, funny. There's that episode with the housekeeper where Blanche thinks she's making a potion for her. And Dorothy says, Blanche, just do what the rest of us do. Black underwear and vodka, something like that. But, you know, she just writes tight, funny jokes.
And I feel like I don't hear about her a lot when they talk about the writers. The only reason I knew who she was is from watching on YouTube, like those TV legend interviews or whatever. And with people from all the different classic shows. And then I saw her and I was like, how do I not know who she is? And then when you brought her up, you're probably the only person that's ever brought her up to me. And I believe she's a black woman. I don't like to assume. I thought Carrie Lake was black, but she doesn't say she is. So what do I know? But I believe she is. So knowing that, you know, and then watching the Margot Reet episode, which I didn't realize she wrote, it makes me look at it differently, knowing that a black woman wrote it. So that's very interesting to know. And, you know, I don't call myself a writer, but I have written, and I've been wanting to get back into it, and I feel like these are all the signs, because I've had like back-to-back, I don't think I've announced it anywhere, so this will be an exclusive to you by the time everybody else hears that they'll already know, but I just did an interview yesterday with Isabel O'Mero from the Golden Girls, of course, who was at Golden Con, and then like you said, I did the one with Sean Sheps and now you, so I guess it's just writers, 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 and I'm like, well, good, this will motivate me, this will make me want to do it. Like, I cleaned off my desk, because this was just for storage, and I getting rid of my chair, because I was like, well, I never sit here, so I cleaned the desk off, I got a chair yesterday, so I am at my desk, because I'm like, okay, I just need to make it easier, because I need any excuse, oh, I can't write, my desk is dirty, oh, I can't write, you know, it's raining, whatever, so I want to make it as easy as possible because I don't have writer's block. I can write stuff if I just sit down and do it, and I never do. So whenever I write something, and people might just be gassing me up, as the kids say, but whenever I have written something, people are like, oh my God, that's so good. I'm like, well, hell, if this was that great and I just sat down and, you know, typed something out, imagine if I really tried and put something into it like I used to, you know, years ago. So I don't know if you can relate to that as a writer.
Yeah, in fact, one of the things that Sean Sheps was really helpful about, because we were talking about sort of this, the muscle of writing, you know, it's like you really kind of like when you go to the gym, you can't just go to the gym and expect to, you know, lift 200 pounds. You have to start slow and at least get there. You know, I can think about going to the gym all day, but unless I'm actually in the room, I'm not, you know, clinking any weights. So she introduced me to a group called the Writing Ninjas, Ninja Writers, something like that. But it's so simple. It's just like this adorable woman gets on at 8 a.m. on YouTube, and it's just one way. We don't even have to look at each other. And she says, okay, welcome, let's go. And she sets a timer, and everyone just types away in silence for 30 minutes. But that tiny bit of accountability and the fact that a few other people are doing it and there's a place to do it, it not only gets me writing, and I think this kind of thing might help you too. It not only gets me writing, but then your brain is kind of in that zone to keep writing, you know? So once that hour is over, we do 2 sets of a half hour. But once that hour is over, my brain is like, well, let's keep going. Oh, I got this big idea, you know? And then that kind of rolls into, you know, the next night when it's like, oh, I kind of want to work on this thing in the morning. And it, you know, it really helps with the motivation because I feel you. I will let work get in the way. I'll let the dog walk get in the way. I will let anything come before writing because it's hard, you know? It, you have to get rid of that internal editor that tells you, oh, this is trash. You know, you really just have to spit it out. Just spit it out first and then worry about the editing later, you know?
Well, I don't have that problem. Maybe I should. Maybe my ideas are too grandiose, but I think it's all hilarious. And I'm like, oh, this is great. Why haven't I been writing? But I did send something to a few people that I wrote a while ago, including, you know, Stan Zimmerman for his expert opinion. And I was like, oh, I got to take his ideas and go back and rewrite it. And I never did that. But maybe I need to join this YouTube thing. 8 a.m. Woo. But maybe I need the afternoon version. Just like you said, accountability, like going to the gym. That's why I don't go to the gym, because all my gym buddies kind of fell to the side. I'm like, well, if I don't have anybody making me do it, then to hell with it. So definitely for sure agree with that. And you were talking about when we were discussing what we would talk about that Winifred wrote a lot of stories about relationships with Dorothy. Would you like to expand on that?
Yeah, particularly with Dorothy's family. You know, this is kind of my, I mean, I love the Golden Girls, but in the past and for this project that I'm working on, I'm really watching it for the jokes. I'm watching it for like, you know, each episode sort of as a capsule by itself. So it's really interesting to watch these sort of 13, 14 episodes that she wrote because you can see the arc that she creates for her own characters. Winifred Hervey is the one who introduces us to Stan at first. Oh. Okay. So in episode 2, I think it is, it's right away in the first season. It's the one where Dorothy's daughter is just going to get married overnight.
Okay. And shout out to Dreyfus. I hear him back there going crazy. Yeah, which was odd that the first episode is about a wedding. The second episode is about a wedding. It's like, okay, is this all this is going to be about? And Rose wears the same wedding outfit back to back. I guess that was just her look. But it was an interesting way to see him. And I feel like they probably knew they wanted to introduce him. But how else could they do it unless it was Kate getting married? So, you know, I'll allow it. And it didn't feel, you know, when I rewatch it, because of the circumstances, it doesn't really feel like, oh, another wedding is just like another story that just happens to have a wedding. And they have a lot of those. They have a lot of weddings, a lot of funerals. So, you know, maybe that's just something with being older. I don't know. But that's interesting that she introduced Stan. I did not know that. And Isabel, when we were talking, was saying how she kind of helped bring Stan back. So it's like the evolution of Stan, because she was like, hey, we ran out of ideas after a while. So then it was like, hey, let's make him rich. So we get the beginning and the end. Winifred, if you're listening, we'd love to have you. But you know more than me. You got some fun facts that I actually don't know, which I appreciate, because if I hear about the damn exclamation on the door or B didn't wear shoes or whatever one more time. So I love to hear stuff that I did not know. And I did not know that.
Cool. Yeah, she introduces us to Stan. Every episode of hers has a joke about Phil. Mm. Almost everyone has some Dorothy and Ma stuff. And I just think it's so interesting how I mean, I think Dorothy is sort of the heart of the show. And I heard about Winifred Hervey on my other favorite host podcast, RuPaul. I don't know if you've heard of RuPaul.
I might have, yes.
So there's, I don't think it's on anymore, but RuPaul used to host a show with Michelle Visage called What's the Tea? And back in 2018, you know, eons ago, before the pandemic, I remember hearing this episode where they talked to this writer on the Golden Girls, and they talked about, you know, the things she had done. And it was Winifred Hervey, and so she is a black woman, because RuPaul says so, so okay. I'm going to believe that. Right. Well, anyway, that's where I heard about Winifred Hervey in the first place, and I just thought she was such an interesting person, and I think she'd be really great to have at GoldenCon, too, because we heard so many, you know, there's producers and writers, and, you know, it's kind of an old show, so people are dying right and left, yeah. Right? Everybody, I'm sure she's in her 70s, probably. So it's interesting to hear, you know, her point of view from when she was in her 20s, you know, that's when all these younger writers were writing on the show. So it's like young people writing these kind of old lady stories, but they're still so fresh and funny.
I didn't even think about the fact that she probably would be that age, because I'm thinking of how she looked in the interviews, but those same interviews had the Golden Girls in them because they were still alive. So that tells you how long ago it was. But in my head, she's still the same age. And you're right. Like, I'm always like, oh, my God, I hope they get this person, get that person, you know, before it's too late. You know, not to put anybody in the grave early, but, you know, we only have so much time. And I hate that it took so long for the momentum to pick up. But I think she would be, you know, a great get to have just from her perspective. You know, as not just a woman, a black woman, but just, you know, her whole viewpoint of the show, I'm sure, is vastly different from a lot of the other writers and, you know, just being in the industry in general. So I agree. And I didn't know that she was responsible for the feel and all that, because there's not a lot of continuity. There's not a lot of story arcs, but it's good to know that there was someone that's like, hey, I'm going to keep including this just so we can kind of have a connection from episode to episode, because I can appreciate that as a viewer that, you know, binge watches and whatnot. And I'm like, hey, well, that doesn't make sense. That's not what they said. So it's nice to have that connection. So it's very interesting. What are some other episodes that she did?
On the RuPaul podcast, she said Dorothy was really the glue of the show and kind of believes that that's why Golden Palace doesn't really hang together as well, because, you know, they're just missing this very important element. Mm-hmm.
I can agree for sure. Like, you know, there's many other shows that people say are modeled after it. And, you know, Khadijah would be the Dorothy on Living Single. Julia is the Dorothy on Designing Women. You know, it's that strong character that, like you said, holds them together. Like, a lot of Golden Palace is so silly, and I'm always thinking, I mean, I love Golden Palace, but I'm thinking, you know, Dorothy was here, this never would have happened. Dorothy wouldn't have even allowed them to buy the hotel in the first place. And she really was that voice of reason. When the really zany stuff would happen, you'd still have Dorothy, you know, bringing it back to reality. And I think she played that, you know, perfectly, of course, but I don't assume that was their intent from the beginning, or if that just evolved into that. But you need that, you know, the straight man, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got to say, I identify with Dorothy. I know it's not cool, but I am the one who's always like, murmur, 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 you know, thinking logically, saying no, having to be, you know, the bad guy who, you know, busts everybody's fun for reality. But I will say, I also relate to Rose, because I grew up in a really small town full of Scandinavians. And for sure, when I moved out of there, I was as dense as her. I believed everything everyone said. You know, I took everything literally. There was no nuance, you know. Is there a girl that you relate to the most?
Probably Sophia, because she just says whatever she wants and always has a snappy comeback. I've been told, I don't know if this is a good thing or not, that I often just respond like I'm on a sitcom. Like, I'll just have the little remark. I'm like, I can't help it. I don't know if it's because I watch a lot of TV or if I just, you know, I'm so hilarious, but that just comes naturally to just have a smart remark like Sophia. Although, if I was an old lady, maybe it would be more acceptable. Perhaps she got away with a lot. But she's definitely the one I relate to the most. But I do relate in different ways to all of them, perhaps, in some aspects. But just, you know, going back to what you said about the writing and how it's so funny, I watched season 7, episode 1 yesterday, doing my homework in preparation for Enough Wicker, because I like to watch the episode they're going to talk about. And I knew they left off on season 6. And I was watching with my husband, and, you know, we were laughing. I've seen it a million times, but it's still so hilarious. I also had to show him, I don't know if you saw the Mother of the Solid Gold Dancer party, the costume contest when I was Blanche, but I had to show him, this is the look I was going for, and this is the walk. This is why I did that, just so he would understand, because I don't assume he did. And I was robbed, but, you know.
Truly, truly robbed. I was just going to say the same thing. The best Blanche out there.
But I didn't even realize, in my head, what I had on looked exactly like what she actually wore. But then when I saw it, I'm like, this is a totally different thing. But it's still the same look, the black pants, the multicolored sweater. And she was looking snatched. She looked really good in that episode. I loved her hair, her jewelry, her outfits. She looked, and so did Dorothy. I love that hair on her. I feel like a lot of them, I mean, Rose looks the same. You know, Betty White looked the same from 1950 to when she died. But I feel like, and of course, Sophia, you know, is aged. But I feel like Dorothy and Blanche specifically looked their best in the last season from all the seasons. You know, they looked younger and fresher and hipper and all that. So it was a nice start to the season. But just joke after joke after joke. And the people in the audience, you know, just howling. I don't know how much of that was being put on or whatever, but you laugh at, I don't know of any other show where you're laughing at the people in the audience laughing as much. And it was, it sounded like the same lady a lot. You probably know what I'm talking about, where she's like literally howling. And it's, that's just a part of the show. And people can, you know, if you can remember the people laughing or whatever for this different scenes, that should show you how funny it is.
She followed up that first episode, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? That was the Stan episode that we got introduced to Stan on. With there's one called The Triangle. And it's Dorothy wants to date this doctor. Then he makes a pass at Blanche. One of those great old fashioned. I don't know. I don't know if anyone's ever made a pass at me, but I would feel very mature if someone did.
Elliot, I assume. Elliot made. And Little Mei Ling. Another classic episode. Interesting to know. Yeah, and again, like you said, like the, some of the ones that she wrote are like some of the, I don't want to say best necessarily, but like some of the more memorable, you know, like there's so many out of that one. Like, you know, what did you make, a ship in a bottle? And there's just so many again, back to back. Or what did she say? Keep your bloomers on, Scarlet. I saw him first. He wants me. I can feel it. Let somebody else feel it. Just joke after joke. And, you know, we have episodes that we like, but not many episodes have so many commonly used zingers, and when you rewatch, you're like, damn, all of these are from this episode. So shout out to Winifred.
It's true. She also, in that episode, I love the story where Blanche is like, this has happened to me before with Anderbo.
I don't even know who Anderbo is. And what makes me, you know, really appreciate is that that was one of the first, you know, episodes that they had, and I'm like, damn, they were super on it and hilarious for it to be early on, because so many shows, they got to ramp up. But they were like, nope, we're all professionals. We got this. We got good writers. Let's do it.
And they must have trusted her a bit, because in her next episode, she introduces us to Gloria. I don't know if they've mentioned Gloria before, but this is the first time Gloria shows up. So this is Blanche's sister, who's wealthy. And
Dorothy's
and it's sister. Just like, I'm sorry. Yeah, Dorothy's sister. Yeah, you're right. It's like she's allowed to expand, you know, outside of these four to tell, to sort of, you know, deepen the story of Dorothy and Sophia and their family, and sort of bring these characters in, because it's not cheap to, you know, write a new character, hire a new actor, you know, suddenly they're in the world too. That is a, you know, it's a big step when it comes to like Hollywood production kind of thing.
Well, I wonder, not to cut you off, with Gloria, I wonder if Winifred had still been on the show, would they have written Gloria the way they did when she returns in season 7? Because it's like totally undoing everything. Now she's out of MONEY, riding the bus from California to Florida. Damn. And that was so much of her character, was the fact that she was rich. And on top of that, she and Dorothy actually got along. One of the few times there's a sibling that they don't just absolutely hate. But then when she comes back, oh, she's always driving me crazy. And like, well, damn, does it, you know, they could have done the story without her having to hate her. I will say the second Gloria did look more like her. But that's very interesting to know that, you know, she introduced her and she wasn't there when she came back. And I wonder if that's why we didn't see her for so long. And they were like, okay, the show's about to end. Let's bring her back real quick. But I was thinking, after you emailed me about wanting to talk about Dorothy's relationships, I thought about the fact that she's the only one that ever really had other friends. Well, her and Sophia. But Sophia's friends didn't get their own episode. It's just like, oh, I'm going out with Gladys or whatever. But Dorothy had Jean. She had Trudy. And the other girls never had that, unless you count, hey, Ingrid.
So, and even the time Rose tried to make friends, it was a huge flop.
Yeah, the flight attendant and what were their names? What the hell were their names? I know their names. Okay, don't tell me. Liz and Stephanie. They hated her. She was too busy trying to eat life. But Dorothy had actual long-term friends that she had known for years that she's still friends with. And then she made a new friend with Barbara Thorndike. It's like, how come nobody else had any friends? Unless you count Imogene, who was spraying food all over them. But I wonder if Winifred had any impact on that. And was like, well, I want Dorothy to have a life outside of them, especially because she was so different from them, being, you know, a little more part of the intelligentsia, if you will.
And she was seeking new friends. I feel like she was friends with men too, where, you know, it was, you know, like with Blanche, it's always, you know, a date. Yeah, I think it's really interesting the way she really fleshed her out as a character. Her jazz musician son, she also introduced him
later on.
Michael, when Michael was trying to date Rose's Oxford-educated daughter, and, you know, it turned into sort of a class issue, sort of a, you know, a little snobbery on Rose's part. She thought, oh, whatever. They're all terrible parents.
They really are. And it's interesting, not only that, you know, someone from the idiot capital of the world is at Oxford, but that she was the one that kind of, you know, was being snooty when, you know, as far as class, you would think that Rose would have been in a lower class because she was from a small town and, you know, lived on a farm, as where Dorothy was from New York. And, you know, yes, you know, neither one of them were rich or anything, but you would think that Dorothy would be like that. She was more educated. But I didn't realize that was the first time we saw Michael, as she says. And he was, how old was he at that point? I think he was 24, which, If he's 24, by that season, they would have been married for over 40 years. So Kate is 40-something, and they were like, okay, 20 years later, now let's have another kid. Guess we weren't supposed to think about that. But that's interesting. I didn't realize for a long time that it was the same Michael, because he had a perm the first time we saw him. What's that? He looked like a totally different person to me. But that's not a good introduction to Michael, and he was kind of an ass every time we saw him, and that certainly didn't help. But I did love that costume at GoldenCon where they were Michael and Bridget under the bed. I don't know how they did all that, but loved it. But wow, Winifred just really expanded the Dorothyverse, didn't she?
I'm saying. She also introduced me to Fess Parker. She always makes jokes about Dorothy looking like Fess Parker, so I finally looked it up. And I don't know if you know, but he's the guy who played Daniel Boone for years and years. And honestly, they do look a little bit.
I didn't realize he was Daniel Boone, but I did look him up after hearing about him all the time. And yes, they do kind of look similarly. And I think at one point she gets compared to Barnaby Jones too. And she kind of looked like him a little bit as well. Also known as Jed Clampett. I can't remember the actor's real name, but you all.
Oh, hilarious. Yeah, it did kind of bum me out to hear at Golden Con that those jokes got to Dorothy, the actress, after a while, that it really was kind of eating away at her to be insulted all the time. To, you know, I wish there had been some kind of, you know, every time we make an ugly Dorothy joke, we have to make 10 smart Dorothy jokes or bring her a cake or something, because, you know, they're pretty harsh.
And like it's been said, the jokes about Blanche and Sophia and Rose were about the character, but everything they were saying is true to Bea Arthur, because that's how she looks. So I think they could have really found another thing, like talk about, you know, her being divorced or having crappy jobs. Like, they really, it's like they slowly built up to it, and then that was all they ever said. And yeah, they would call Blanche fat sometimes and Rose sometimes, you know, she's puffy, but this was consistent, and I don't blame her. And I noticed that in season 7, we start to get the good Dorothy stories, and I'm like, oh, is this because she was pissed and said she's leaving, so now they're trying to butter her up? Too late. Too little, too late. They could have been doing that all along, or at least sprinkle them in more. And, you know, I could see Blanche saying some of those things, because sometimes she would group in Rose and Dorothy together. But, like, the scene where, you know, the chain of the pearls, that whole thing was horrible. Or them laughing at her being naked and all that. It's like, well, you know, it's funny to watch, but I can imagine that, you know, would not feel so great. And being the professional, I'm sure she didn't want to make a fuss. I would have been up there like, I'm leaving today if you don't stop writing this note.
Yeah, exactly. I also love Winifred is so good at writing a real relationship between a divorced couple, because, you know, it's not simply, oh, I hate Stan, that's it. You know, Dorothy goes through episode after episode of kind of re-falling in love with him sometimes, or at least getting really nostalgic about how things used to be, letting him back into her heart. And then, of course, he does some dumbass thing and, you know, she remembers again. So what's interesting about the whole arc of what she wrote, she introduces us to him in the first episode. And then in her last episode, which is season four, she only wrote one episode in season four, but it really is kind of this Dorothy truly letting Stan go. It's the one where he's about to get married and his fiance comes and meets her at the bar and says, oh, he just has this ex-wife and she's just amazing. And there's no way I can ever compete with her. And there's no way I can ever be. And her name's Dorothy, of course, you know. So Dorothy is very graceful, and she, I think, is really coming to her own conclusion that, you know, I had this time with him, it was lovely, it was hard, it was all these things, but I'm really ready to let him go. I don't want him back anymore. And, you know, I know he comes back later in other seasons, but to me it just is a really, you know, as a writer, I can see the full arc that she has done with this family, and I just think it's so interesting. I would love to meet her someday. I did find her publicist's phone number if anybody wants to try to reach out to her.
Just give her a ring, you know, hey, how you doing?
Uh-huh. Are you doing anything? If RuPaul can get her, you know.
Right. That's interesting. Now, that was her last episode when he married Catherine, who has the same name as his daughter and his niece, because Gloria's daughter's name, Catherine, as well. And there was another one, too. I was like, wow, they really love this name. But I'm glad that she wasn't, you know, she was a little older and she was likable. Because if he was marrying another Chrissy, you know, that would be a whole different thing. And at this point, damn, that's three wives in just a couple of years. But it's interesting that they didn't do anything with that. And once again, you know, knowing this backstory, I'm wondering, had she stayed, would we have seen more of Catherine? And I guess because she introduced her, then she left, they were like, eh, well, to hell with her. He can just say, oh, Catherine left me. And then we never hear anything else ever again. I would have been semi-interested to see that dynamic with, you know, him coming up, oh, it's me, Stan, and Catherine, and maybe seeing something there. Because we don't see a lot of Dorothy interacting with his, you know, women or exes, whatever you want to say. And I think that could have been interesting. And it's funny that she's like, oh, I'm done with him, only to, you know, want to go back to him 80 more times, which again makes me think, is it because Winifred wasn't there? Like, if she had stayed throughout, would they have even, you know, started dating and almost got married again? Because it looks like that she wanted Dorothy to not be with him anymore. And maybe with the shift in writers, they were like, no, let's bring him back. Maybe because they just loved, you know, the actor and the character. I don't know if they needed to necessarily get back together. I'm kind of okay with it since he was rich and he can make up for it with money. I would have taken the car, but, you know, that's just me. I'll be pothead any day of the week. But that's very interesting because I always wonder these things. And, you know, without knowing these details that you're sharing, I just speculate. And now it's kind of lining up, you know, when you look at the trajectory of the series.
I swear my next book is going to be all about Winifred Hervey. And just this idea of real, you know, like a real divorced couple going through the back and forth and the love and the hate and all the things. Remind me, doesn't Stan show up in the last episode where Dorothy's getting, he's like a limo driver?
He kidnaps her. And okay. He ends up being the one in the limo. And it is interesting because part of me is like, you know, why did she entertain this guy? Why did she let him in the house? But they were together almost 40 years. They have two kids, allegedly three, according to some fan theories. They got multiple grandkids, Roger, Lamar, little Robbie with the baseball cap. So, you know, anything, you know, could happen. And you're not going to just totally be able to shut this guy out of your life. You're going to see him and you're going to have to be around him. So you have to tolerate him just to a certain extent. I probably wouldn't tolerate him as much as she did. But, you know, you're never really loose from this person unless maybe you have no kids, no mutual friends, and you're not living in the same place.
I mean, just in my own life, the hardest thing it looks like to me is raising kids with an ex, you know, that's it. Cause you really have to still be there for the kids. You have to, you know, they're going to have a wedding. That's what I think is interesting is Stan usually shows up for some event, you know, there's really no keeping him out of his own daughter's wedding. Right. So you kind of have to deal with him being there. And that does seem like a major challenge.
And if I'm not mistaken, that was the first time Dorothy saw him after he left her, right?
Yes. That's what it seems like, yeah. And that is interesting to me, too, because, man, I could see leaving someone after 7 years, after 14 years, 38 years. You have put in a lot of your life. And what is Stan offering to all these young women that keeps them coming? I mean, Dorothy is much better looking than Stan, and mm-hmm. she can't get a man. But for some reason, he's got 25-year-olds all over him.
They get the approval number on his MasterCard. That's what it is. Because otherwise, I don't know, maybe, he brings out the big guns, and that's enough for them. But I think it's interesting, first of all, that he suddenly is back in Miami, because originally he's, on Maui, and then he's back, and I guess I've always wondered, did she, Stan, and Sophia all move from New York together, or did they come and then they brought her later? I don't know. But they make it seem as if they were already in Miami. I can't assume that they got divorced in New York and then she moved there with Sophia or by herself and then he followed her. I sure hope he didn't, wouldn't put it past him. But it's like he had nothing else to do. Like he said before, I don't have any friends. Or he would say, you're my best friends. Like, how fucking pathetic, to just be harassing her nonstop for no reason. Like, in today's age, there would be a restraining order and all types of things. But, like you said, 38 years, I would be pissed that I wasted my life. But I don't even see why she would have stayed after the kids were grown. Like, was there really anything there to even make it worthwhile? Or was she just comfortable? I don't know what to think. But at least she was able to get her own place and start all over and not feel like, my life is over. And maybe that's why he always came by, because he saw what he was missing out on and he felt like he made a mistake.
I think that's right. And the hurt was so much that she was like, you know what? I actually am not going to let you back in. So good for her. There is one episode I'd love to talk about. It's called Grab That Dough. And that's also a Winifred Hervey episode. One of the classics, of course.
She had a lot of classics under her belt. Yeah, that one with Lucy Lee Flippin, who we had at Golden Con, of course. That's interesting because from talking about them with you, I'm so used to thinking of her with these family episodes, but that one was kind of just a more wacky one. Maybe she wanted to show her range, but that episode, I don't hate it at all, but I don't love it like everyone else seems to. Similar to the murder mystery, I like that episode too, but that's the highest rated ever. And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe because they're out in the world doing wacky stuff, but the Grab That Show episode is just so random, like the year of our life supply of soup that we'd never see again. And is an electric skillet even a thing? Perhaps. I don't know. I don't know what they were going to do with that convertible. Maybe tell Feinbaum to eat her heart out, but two at a time, because it was a two-seater. And then the living room furniture, I know they didn't want to replace all that wicker that Nancy Reagan's decorator had provided. But it was interesting to see just the rapidness in which the episode gets going. It's like they're immediately on a plane. They're in California. They're doing the show. They're in the hotel. They're back home. A lot happens. I don't know how they got back without their purses, with their IDs and their money. Irrelevant, I suppose. And then they leave Sophia to die in an intersection, which is problematic when her heel falls off. But it is one of the earlier wacky episodes, I think.
She's got a couple out there episodes. What I like, the exchange I like so much in that one is back in Sicily, I was on a talk show or I was on a game show. It was torture. Well, what was it called? I told you, torture.
That is one of my favorite exchanges. And she's like, oh, they use lightning. In the lightning round.
They use real
hilarious.
Lightning.
And I love how, you can tell that she's yanking their chain sometime. And sometimes and Dorothy gets so mad at the absurdity of her stories. I think I would like that, but, Dorothy just gets especially pissed because she knows she's full of it. But I dressed up like her in the Grab That Dough episode a little bit last year. I had the smock with the money on it and the goggles and whatnot. So an iconic look.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me ask you about this episode. Do you ever talk about the one where they go on a terrible vacation?
That's another one I'm not crazy about. I don't know why. It just seems so off. Maybe because, unlike a lot of other shows, especially now, we really only see them in the house for the most part. There might be a scene here or there, but this like whole thing takes place somewhere else. And I don't know what it is about it. And then like the three guys, that's very like hammy 80s sitcom. It's almost like a backdoor pilot. Like, what is, I felt like they intended to do more with that and then just were like, eh, whatever. And then they crash on this island and then there's this resort on the other end. And it just, I don't know, maybe because I associate the wackier stuff with later seasons that maybe just taken a little off guard. And isn't that the one where Sophia has her date with the gardener?
Yeah, with the, he has a name, which I can't remember right now. But yeah, he's an Asian guy and he's introducing her to sushi and she like pretends to eat it and then hides it in her purse.
And I hate that we, you know, never see him again, but Sophia with her interracial relationships, which she has quite a lot of despite being the oldest one, but that was very cute. And I love that when they're calling, she's like, who the hell is this? And then the song that the guy sings when he's shaking the bed, I had to look that up. I think it was during an episode that we recorded because I wasn't too familiar with it outside of that episode. And it has the guy that works there. I don't know his name, but he's in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he's an old comedian. You're right. And it is so funny because what you're talking about, it used to be a thing where you would have a vibrating bed that was kind of, and it was a trope in TV shows. So you'd put a quarter in the bed and it would vibrate, I guess, to be sexy or something. And so at this terrible resort that they're at, it promises a vibrating bed. So all three of the girls outside of Sophia, the other three, get together on this bed, put a quarter in, and then this employee from the hotel comes in, kicks his leg up on the bed, and just starts shaking it with his leg while he plays on the guitar. It is so out of pocket, so random, and just so funny.
And they talked about that, I think it was out on the Lanai's segment at Golden Con, where they were asking if anybody had ever used a vibrating bed, and this one woman was saying how she really enjoyed it. So I gotta find me one of those because I wasn't even sure if they were real, but apparently they at least used to be. But that whole episode, like, again, I don't hate it, but it's not one I think of as like a top one, and it's maybe because I'm just so used to their format being the same. And it's nothing against the writing, I think it's just it threw me a little bit.
No, I feel you. I forget about it until I see it. And then I go, oh, yeah, this episode. I really, you know, it's off my radar, too. Do you remember Whose Face Is It Anyway? Where Blanche is going to, I think, a high school reunion. And she's so upset that she doesn't look, you know,
20. She had to eat a whole pan of lasagna. And she's like, oh, I'm not upset. You know, I forgot what they said. But she's like, I'm upset because I wasn't the center of attention and nobody said I was the prettiest. I can feel that, Blanche.
but I think you are a little bit of a Blanche. I can see the Sophia in you, but you're a stunner. You know, you're a Blanche through and through.
I mean, I do really enjoy when I do my skits and stuff, Blanche the most, because she's just so over the top and, you know, outrageous in her self-confidence and whatnot. So I'll take it. But that was when she was going to get the facelift. And then, was it the facelift or the boob job?
It was the boob. I think this was the facelift.
Okay. She's had so many times she wanted to go under the knife, even though she said surgery scares me to death. Now I'm trying to remember because I was thinking of the Lillian episode. I'm conflating them. So I don't even remember what the hell happened. She was going to get the facelift and then they went to the hospital and they thought that it was her and it was a guy. And Dorothy's like, whoa, because they pulled back the sheet. And Rose's like, or somebody said they're going to have a hell of a lawsuit on their hands. I don't remember what made her not get it, though.
I think it was just a change of heart. I don't think they really explain it. But she checks herself out of the hospital and they meet her back at home. You know, it's maybe there's a better solution to it than I'm remembering. I'm sure, but that's what I remember. Sure, they just kind of wrap it up without saying much.
Which is interesting because she got a facelift on Maude. Vivian did because she was, you know, so much younger than Bea and they were saying they were the same age. And they were aging her initially, not thinking she would be a regular. So that was their excuse, was giving her a facelift. But I feel like they were very common because I know Estelle got one. I think B might have had one at one point. I know Maude got one, but it was just so commonplace. And now I never hear anything about that. I guess BBLs are the new facelifts.
When you have a midlife crisis, you know, you can get a facelift or you can give yourself a perm and start jazzercise.
Yeah, that's true.
The audit, Stan is getting audited, and of course, because they were married a few years ago, Dorothy is sort of wound into his, government issues. That one
Paisa.
has a great line. Rose says, "Oh, are we having Italian?" And Sophia says, "No, we're having Chinese in a marinara suit."
That's funny. I wonder if I'm trying to think back since we got the Paisan in there. I'm like, are there, and we got Marguerite, are there black people or non-white people in all of her episodes? Because the guy at the hotel. So I wonder if she was like pushing for this, like, hey, if I'm writing it, put somebody in this that isn't white. Because that's, I feel like Paisan is the only guy that where they don't bring up him being black. Or is there an NAACP joke in there? I feel like it might
No,
be.
I think you're onto something, because she, even in crowd scenes, they seem more diverse, and she'll introduce characters without saying, I mean, again, we go back to it being like in the 80s and being how it was, right? So the Asian guy for sure is a gardener. He's making sushi. He's, there's some sort of
His English
stereotypical
is
stuff.
very terrible.
Exactly. But I do think that she's making an effort to make it less of a fully white show. I think she's doing what she can without calling it out, right? I don't know how you feel about the housekeeper episode, but there's a black woman starring in the thing. I don't know, she's got kind of an island accent, so I don't know where they
Yeah,
say
they
she's
didn't. I
supposed to be
don't think they
from.
said, and I think that just led to the whole voodoo thing and all of that.
But what's fun is that she's actually going to school to be a lawyer, I think. That's how it turns out at the end. So she's just a terrible housekeeper because she's busy studying all the time. So it's like, offering these alternative storylines compared to like what would be super stereotypical.
And I'm just gonna, in my head, it's gonna be canon because Paula Kelly was on the first season of Night Court as an attorney. So I'm just gonna say that Marguerite became an attorney and she ended up working with Roz, who later decided to become a doctor and come on Empty Nest the last two seasons with Estelle, the Golden Verse. But speaking of black people, there were black people at Kate's wedding. I know it was at least a black woman. I think she had a black guy with her. And I remember watching it, one, because there's not a lot of black people on the show, but also it was such a small wedding party. I'm like, who the hell is that? Like, what are they doing here? So maybe it's her high school best friend or something, but it's nice that they put them, in there because they really didn't need to or have to. And they're just there throwing rice, be happy, which is that something people say when they throw rice? I don't know, but that's what they said. So, thank you, Winifred, for the diversity.
And she just writes a really good episode. You can tell that she was making those episodes as funny as she possibly could. There's like barely room for a breath. It's just joke, 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 and they're solid. So she also wrote, what did she, I think she also wrote for The Cosby Show for a while. So maybe that'll be my next dive into some of her Cosby Show episodes.
Or the Felicia Rashad show, as we like to say. I don't know where I took that from. I feel like out on the lanai was saying that. But when I was talking to Isabel, she was saying how some of the writers, like they came in later, like Mark Cherry, were actually fans of the show, and that you could kind of see that in their writing. And just judging off the episodes, I mean, I know she was there from the beginning, but I feel like she was a fan as well because it's going to be a fan that's going to pay that extra attention and say, oh, let's meet the sister, let's meet the the son. I think more so than somebody that's just there for a job and they're like, okay, we're going to get the jokes out, it's going to be funny, but it's not necessarily going to develop this character in the same care and same way because which is fine, it's just a job. I have jobs that I don't necessarily care about, but I'm still doing the work. As far as I'm not invested necessarily. When I worked at Guaranteed Rate, did I care about their mortgages? Not at all. But I still did my work. So I think she probably looked at it, I'm assuming from a different way, especially as a woman, and wanting to present women a certain way on TV and not just the jokes, which are great as well. I think there's room for both.
And she gets some deep cuts in there. I don't know if you've ever heard this comedian, Stepan Fetchik. He's from the like 1902, so it's okay if you haven't heard of him. But he's a black comedian from long, long time ago. And she does this kind of wordplay where she manages to get his name in, but it's about something else. So if you really start to look at, I think she was just very purposeful about, trying to get culture in the show, whether people were going to get it or not.
Yeah, I remember the joke. I think it was Rose, had a play on it in terms of like Saint Olaf, and I had no idea what it was. I guess I got to look at Matt Browning's book to figure out some of these. That makes me wonder. She didn't write the episode with Lorraine?
Which one was that?
When Michael and Lorraine get married, she didn't write that.
I don't think so.
I'm like, well, it had plenty of black people. Maybe she wrote that too, and had Michael in it. But.
Oh, right. Because it was not about him being, or about her being black. It was about she was older, right?
Yeah,
Or that's what, Dorothy was so upset because she was his teacher or something.
I don't think she was his teacher, but she was long in the tooth, and they're saying she's like, oh, a regal black woman and a scuzzy little white boy. But initially Dorothy, when he says she's black, she's like, oh God. So I'm like, I mean, I can understand the concern, but it was a little jarring to hear that from Dorothy. I would expect that from Blanche, maybe. But she did come around, and she was just nervous in general, I'm sure. But I'm surprised she didn't write that. I wonder who did. Anybody out there listening? Tell us, because I'm sure I'll forget as
Please
soon as we're done to look it up. But
drop it in the comment. You know what I'm mixing that up with? Because I know you're a big Designing Women fan too.
yes.
There's a Julia Sugarbaker episode where her son
Yes.
gets involved in his with his professor. That's the
I
deal.
forget she has a son. He kind of disappeared very quickly. Maybe one day I'll do a Designing Women podcast. I don't know who's out there
Oh,
listening for that,
if
but
you need a co-host, I'm here for it.
yeah, I would bet money that Kay has never seen an episode of Designing Women. I've seen all of them, and I'm following this like Facebook and Instagram page where they show it in like blocks, and I find myself watching them again. And I was looking at some today, and it was so hilarious. It was the one where the guy, he's from Golden Girls. Who is he? I just posted about it. Oh, the actor, that was cheating on them when they did the play. He's in this being a serial cheater again. They're redecorating his wife's house and his mistress's house. And it's just so hilarious. And I wish that, there could have been some type of crossover, especially since Golden Palace was on CBS, the last season of Designing Women. Some type of thing with, Blanche is from Georgia. I would have loved to see them all play off of each other, especially her and Suzanne, who was gone by the time Golden Palace came. But her and Suzanne, Charlene and Rose, both from small towns, very naive. And I feel like Sophia and Mary Jo, the little petite ones sit in the corner but have all the smart comments. And of course, Julia annihilating everyone, far more than Dorothy, shockingly. I feel like in the first season we get a little bit of that with the, give us a break, would you, Mac? That reminds me of Ray Don. And it really gave me that vibe. And I feel like, I don't know if Designing Women, made them steer away from that, but I feel like Dorothy definitely could have been like that, just like going in on everybody. But they weren't as preachy, so maybe that's why.
Yeah, they are both really good shows in their own worlds. And, for a lot of the things you're saying. And what I, it's not news to anyone, but what I heard at Golden Con that I, thought was interesting, the creator of the Golden Girls really created a dynamic between the four of them that always worked. Dorothy was always black and white, doing the right thing, da da da. Rose is more wholesome. She's a little bit dumber. Blanche is, sex crazed. It's all about men. Sophia's doing her own thing. And so whatever combination you put any of them in, they're at odds in one way or another, which is what makes good TV, what makes good drama, which makes good comedy, which is why, honestly, I struggle as a fiction writer sometimes because I really want everyone to get along and just be nice to each other. And it doesn't make for very interesting characters. But I think Designing Women does the same thing, where they all have this just very firm point of view that doesn't really waver, and it just works so well in the balance between, the group of four.
Right. And even,
Also, oh God.
I was just gonna say, even their placement, like they all have their desk. Suzanne's gonna be on the couch. And it's just, the formula is kind of similar to the kitchen table, but they rotate a little bit, except for Dorothy, other than like three times. But you know, these things, it works. You find out what works. I'm sure they didn't write it originally. Say, okay, Suzanne will always be on the couch. But it's like, no, once we see it, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
I also, just speaking of that, I realize I'm sitting in Charlene's chair.
That's
too.
That's true. The Addams Family, Designing Women, it's all over the place. And that reminds me, in high school, I wrote a script. It was The Facts of Life meets Designing Women meets The Golden Girls. And it made sense. I wish I could find it. I got to try to hack into my old AOL account because I had emailed it to some people. I think that there was like a class reunion that Dorothy knew Mrs. Garrett from New York. They went to high school together. And Blanche had to come back to Atlanta. I don't know why Mrs. Garrett needed to come and bring the girls, but it made sense at the time. And it was like all the universes combined, because I used to love The Facts of Life as well. Around the time I got into Golden Girls, actually, for a minute, I was more into The Facts of Life than the Golden Girls. But again, another dynamic, you know, Blair would definitely be the Blanche. Joe is probably the Dorothy, I'd say. Natalie is the Rose. And Tootie is the Sophia, just there with the smart remarks. So, you know, again, it works. And, you know, another, you know, Golden Girls connection. We have Cloris Leachman came in later on, and she worked with Betty on The Mary Tyler Moore Show. And then, of course, George Clooney joined shortly after being on The Golden Girls. It's like they're all connected somehow. And Mrs. Garrett, I'm sure there's a connection between Charlotte Ray and B, other than their Sex in the City parody they do on TV Land, in the universe of Norman Lear, because you got Maud is the cousin of Edith, and the Drummonds, I'm sure there's something there. I know that Mr. Drummond eventually was Maud's neighbor, but again, it's like it's all connected back then.
Yeah, it's the Marvel universe, but with Golden Girls.
The Golden Verse, for sure. Like, there was a, I don't know when it was, like, the 50th anniversary or something of CBS, and they had, like, all the people from all of their shows all in one big shot, and it's like, damn, they really are, you know, I'm like, oh, they're from this show, and they did this show together, and they did this show, like, I need to write it out, or, like, some type of diagram of all the ways that these people are connected, especially back then. Now everybody's an actor or whatever, but it was like the same rotation of guest actors, the same rotation of like lead people that would just get in show after show after show, and they just kept it in house. You know, if you look at The Love Boat and Star Trek, which came later, and Murder, She Wrote, you'll see a lot of Golden Girls people just all the time, and that's just so interesting to me. Someone out there write a book about that.
I think it's you, bud.
Is it me?
Yes, I was just thinking while you were talking, first of all, I can't wait to read what you start writing. Mm-hmm. It's going to be great. And I think you're really onto something with an idea here. And every book just starts with an outline. So just, you know, get your ideas together, sort them, and then start expanding that outline. Pretty soon you'll have some chapters, and then you'll have a book, maybe in a year or two. But, you know, it sounds like you have all the knowledge, the interest, and the passion. So I say go for it.
Well, nobody steal this. This is copyrighted, okay? But I probably wouldn't do it the right way like you would. I'm just going to be like, I'm making whatever. I don't care. You have no rights to this, and then I'll get sued. But I do have a lot of TV knowledge that, you know, is useless. And no one, you know, that I know personally is probably that interested. So maybe that would be a good way to get it out there, to put it in a book. And, you know, I don't know how, but I'll figure it out. I mean, it can't be that hard. My ex wrote a book. I mean, it's lesbian erotica. But hey, you know, I don't know what he knows about that. But if he can do that, I can certainly write something. But it probably wouldn't take me a year, because when I'm in the zone, I want to, like, get it all out right then. So this time tomorrow, I'll be like, so here's my 12 chapters, if you'd like to take a look. But, yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea. Did you get to see the skit we did at Golden Con?
I did not. Tell me about it, please.
It's on the Twitter and somewhere else, probably Instagram, but I wanted to do some like of, you know, homage to Golden Palace since it gets forgotten. So we did it to where, you know, I'm all like in character. I'm like, nope, my name is Roland and I'm with the Golden Palace. And then we got the ladies coming out, which were luckily, because we had a lot of cast changes. Luckily, some friends of the show were able to step in at the last minute and play. We had we didn't have a Dorothy because Dorothy wasn't there. We had a Rose, a Sophia, a Blanche, an Oliver, and an Angela. And then we had Mark Sockin was in it, and Cindy Fee and Stan Zimmerman. So I was like, oh, well, I've written something that's been performed on a stage in front of hundreds of people, so I guess I can call myself a playwright or something. It was just a short little skit, but it was cute. And I, you know, on paper, I didn't think it was anything that great. It was okay, but Zach was like, oh, this is so funny. Oh, we have to do it. Because after a while, when, you know, some cast changes happened, I was like, yeah, maybe we just don't need to do it. He was like, no, it's so good. We have to. And we kept, you know, doing rewrites and stuff. So it was the day of, like an hour or two before, and we're trying to go over it, and we're fucking everything up. I couldn't remember anything, and I was like, yeah, this is gonna suck. Maybe we'll just read off the scripts or whatever. But we got up there, and everybody remembered their lines, and it was cute, and it went really well. So I was like, oh, maybe I should write some more stuff, because I've been thinking, like, maybe I should write a play. Maybe I should write a book. I don't know what I want to write. I just want to write something. But Sean Chips told me I better not come to LA without my outlines done for her to see. So that'll keep me accountable. But I'll send you some stuff, and you can tell me what you think of what I have actually written. I don't know what's going to happen with it, but, you know.
Cool.
I want to do something, because we writers, you know, we have to stick together, you know.
Well, how fun to get it to come alive in front of your eyes, too. It's one thing to have it on the page, right, and sort of have it in your head. But you got Cindy Fee to be in your work? Oh, that's cool.
I didn't even expect them to be in it, but Zach was like, hey, they're going to be in it, too. I was like, okay, sure. So, you know, he wrote up something for them. So that was exciting. And, yeah, I don't think I've ever – have I? The last time I had something that I wrote – performed was a YouTube series I used to do, and that was in like 2012 or something, and I showed it in class, and my professor, Stephen Zacharias, I hope he's still alive. If he is, I'm gonna get him to come on the show. But he wrote Revenge of the Nerds, and he really liked, you know, the video, and he was saying that I reminded him of John Waters. So I was like, I'll take that compliment. But other than that, I don't think I really wrote a lot in performing, because I used to do a lot of YouTube videos, and I still do stuff now. But I just make it up. As soon as I turn the camera on, I just start talking and figure it out and edit it. And it probably looks like I wrote something. But I would like to actually write something and then have it performed. So it's good to know that you're in Chicago in case, you know, I need somebody. I'm like, hell, all these people have these little crappy shows or whatever. I can rent a theater for a day or two and, you know, sell a few tickets and get up there and say something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Maybe I'll do a one-woman show, Blanche, the miniseries, and I'll bring back my character from Golden Con, and I'll just sit up there and talk about my life in Atlanta. Who knows? I don't know. Well, I'll think of something. But, yeah, this was an interesting little walk down Winifred Lane for me to not really know too much about her. And now I feel like I'm a super fan, so I have to stalk her like I do everyone else and ask her to be on the show. So we can really get to the meat and taters here with Dorothy, because we have broken down, you know, Blanche several times because she just gives you so much to work with. And Dorothy a little bit, but I feel like not as much as I would like. And since Winifred, you know, clearly Dorothy was dear to her heart, maybe she can give some insight. Because I feel like that's, you know, a big part of Dorothy's character is that she actually has a lot of self-confidence, even though they make it seem as if she doesn't. Because if she didn't, she wouldn't be able to put up with half the shit she puts up with. And I wish they had, you know, played that up more of how confident she really was. Because she didn't give a damn. I don't need a man. I don't need this. I'm just, you know, happy to teach and read and do the crossword puzzles and, you know, the lunar module, whatever. And I feel like people who are confident in who they are can do that. Because even if Blanche really did want to sit at home and put the lunar module puzzle together, she wouldn't be able to do it. Because she'd be like, oh my God, it's, you know, Saturday night and Blanche, everyone doesn't have a date. Oh my God, and she's freaking out. Dorothy didn't freak out like that, not having a date. Now, she was a little thirsty when she would have somebody and she's crazy nuts about this guy. But, you know, we all get a little thirsty sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it does take a lot of self-confidence to stay home on a Friday or to say, hey, this is what my life looks like. And I'm not worried about getting a facelift because the girls in high school look better than I do.
Mm-hmm. So you want to talk about Dorothy all the time, but you're running to get elective surgery because you went to your damn reunion. I mean, we all know Blanche is insecure, but she didn't seem to think so. And, you know, maybe Dorothy and I do relate a bit. I remember in high school, I'd be at home on the weekend scrapbooking. But I still have those scrapbooks, so it wasn't for nothing.
I really liked the point that you made on a different episode of the podcast, where if Dorothy had had that confidence and had beauty, she just would have been untouchable, unstoppable. So it's almost like they had to give her some, you know, a break in her armor sort of thing so that she could be human too.
Right. And a lot of that, you know, was hair and makeup. Like, they made her look a little more masculine in some of the earlier seasons, maybe to play that up. And, you know, some of the stuff that she's wearing, looking like she's about to go to war in the 1700s. It's like, well, you know, you're playing into it, you know? She had plenty of times where she looked great. So now I'm wondering, did they purposely, like, try to keep her out of the cuter clothes so they could beat her up more? Interesting. If anybody out
and
there
they
knows.
Loved throwing layers on her. She is never wearing fewer than three outfits on top of each other.
And a lot of crisscrossy, you know, big collars and buttons and giant brooches. I know that a lot of this stuff was custom made, but I just would love to, I don't know if Judy Evans is still active, but I'd love to hear her thoughts on why she dressed them the way they did. Because they talk about how they had their individual styles, but I want to know, what is it that made you say, no, this is very Dorothy right here. These 85 layers, that's what she needs. But it's, you know, it's distinct. If you see that look, you just automatically, you know, think of Dorothy. So it certainly worked.
I love a shoulder pad.
I mean, I'd have a few things with shoulder pads in them. If I have a lot of vintage stuff, and I don't take the shoulder pads out. I don't care if I look like a linebacker. Maybe that's what I'm going for.
I'm thrilled that fashion is coming back with shoulder pads. I've been waiting since eighth grade.
And I have a lot of stuff, and I used to do little pop-up shops and stuff to sell them, and after the pandemic, I don't really ever see any, and I've been holding on to this stuff, but I'm like, well, I don't want to move with all of this, and I'm not going to wear it, so I do wear some of them in the little skits. But I think it's called Out of the Closet in Boys Town. Now I don't feel bad that I have all this stuff because I can take it there because the items they collect go towards AIDS research. So now I'm like, oh, this is just me, you know, my contributions, except I'm not writing a check. I'm just buying lots of stuff I don't need and then giving it to them. So it makes it okay. So I have a lot of stuff I brought recently. Anybody listening in the Chicagoland area, if you want to dress like a golden girl, they might still have some of my stuff there.
I'm excited about your move to LA, but Chicago is losing a gem.
Well, thank you. I always tell my husband, I'm like, we'll never be back. But, you know, our parents live here and, you know, family and friends. So I'm sure I'll be back at some point. But I just feel like I got to go where the action is. Like, if I was there now, I would be picketing, even though I'm not a writer. I would be picketing with them just to be in the mix. So I feel like I got to go, you know, because if you're in Chicago, either you're going to be in plays or in Chicago Fire, Chicago Mayor, Chicago PD. It's kind of your only options. And I don't really want to be in a play unless I'm on writing. And I don't think I want to be on that. So guess I got to go. And I won't miss the snow either. So the cold. So LA, here I come. And actually, Monday, a year from Monday is when I guess we'll be gone because Elise will be up. So got to make it count. The countdown to my dramatic exit. I guess I'll run out and run back in three times like Dorothy did when we finally leave. But I think we're going to take an RV because of all the animals, because I don't trust them with someone else and I don't want to be stuck in a tiny car. So that should be interesting in itself and a perfect time to write because I ain't driving it.
Yeah, the thing about Chicago is that Chicago loves people after they leave. You know, if you cut your teeth here, if you do all your things here, if you're doing a show at the Hideout every week, snooze. But the second you move to LA or New York and then come back to say hi, people lose their minds.
Right. So many comedians, everything. Oh, I started at the Groundlings and Second City and all of that. And it's like, well, clearly you had to leave in order to do anything. It's like New York or LA. And I don't think I want to be on SNL, so LA it is. But at least, you know, in my head, I'm going to have a TV show, multiple shows, and I'm going to base them in Chicago, like, you know, According to Jim and all the Bonnie Hunt shows and all that. So hopefully I'll be able to, you know, bring that essence of Chicago to Hollywood a little bit. And have you
I
on
can't
the
wait.
Team.
I love following you on social media. You're very funny. You're very consistent. Well, you know,
you.
I mean, all those things are going to translate well to Hollywood.
Hopefully. I'm like, okay, how long am I going to do this Golden Girls thing? Because I might want to branch out at some point, and I don't want to be, you know, oh, the guy that loves Golden Girls. I mean, I do, but there's more to me. So I'm trying to think about that. Like, how am I going to balance both? Or am I going to have to stop this? Or maybe incorporate other things? I haven't fleshed that out quite yet because I do feel a little stuck because there's a lot I want to do. But I'm like, oh, well, that's not Golden Girls related, so I guess I can't post it. But it's my account. I can do what I want. So we'll see. But I do try to have some creativity because I know, you know, like the meme pages, they don't have podcasts. The podcast pages, they don't post a lot of memes. So I'm like, well, good. I'll just cover both ends of the market here. Etsy, I'm, you know, all over the place just to try to, you know, get as many eyes on this as possible. And it's nice to see my, you know, work with finger quotes pay off and, you know, to now be recognized for my addiction, I guess, and, you know, be at Golden Con with the people from the show and, you know, to be, I guess it made it worthwhile, I suppose, all those years. Now I'm like, I'll just box up all these collectibles. I don't need all of that stuff. This is how I show that I'm a real fan now. But I think that, you know, it was nice that I was able to kind of get a resurgence through something that I love. It's like my work paid off. And when and if I do get the opportunity to, you know, have a show or do whatever, I definitely want to get people from the Goldenverse and just go full circle, you know, which you'll hear me, you know, trying to hire everybody 5 years, 10 years in advance. But so many people are so talented that are associated with that show that I feel like are not getting the, you know, the attention that they should be getting. So if I'm ever in a position to give it to them, I want to do that. One, because I know that they're talented. They know what they're doing. They have experience. But kind of pay it forward. Like, hey, the Golden Girls got me here and you did the Golden Girls. So now let me do something for you so you can do your thing. Especially because a lot of them are older and their older people are not valued in general, let alone in Hollywood. They want the newest, the freshest. I don't want that. I don't want these TikTok people or whoever they are. I want somebody that's worked on a bunch of shows that has the experience because they know what they're doing. So I hope that it happens. It will. I'm claiming it. And you're going to see some production from me and it's going to be like, hey, aren't those all Golden Girls people? Yep, they sure are. And since you're a writer, come on over.
I'm happy to be part of the Barrettverse.
Well, this is your offer. I can't pay you, so let me circle back once I have money. But
it's all good. Can I show you one thing before we wrap up? You were talking about Golden Girls tchotchkes and things. I bought myself a treat, mostly to celebrate this super secret project that I'm working on. Maybe you'll recognize this from Golden Con. I bought myself a cheesecake sculpture.
Oh.
Do you remember there was a booth that was kind of like black light, you know? It was sort of like, so the artist, his name is Zach Blatt, and he's a really good artist just in general. You look at his paintings, they're pretty impressive. So he had some sort of updated Golden Girls ideas, right? Where like it's Golden Girls, but sort of in modern meme kind of forms. And then hanging throughout, he had these sort of like a gravity defying cheesecake, you know, the fruit kind of stacks up, the cake is floating in midair. And I think it's stupid in all the best ways. And I love it so much. So I got this the other day. I'm so excited about it.
That reminds me when I used to live in Uptown, I had a pretty big kitchen. And at that point, my collection was not what it is now. And it was only like 2-3 years ago, but my Golden Girl stuff was all in the kitchen. So I had like, you know, it kind of looked like somebody's grandmother's kitchen. Like I had all these little things that your grandma would have in the kitchen. And I was looking for a fake cheesecake to put on the table and I could not find one. So I had fake cupcakes just so people can always try to eat them when they come over. And I could say, that's not real. But that's definitely something I would have had if I still had that. So maybe my next place. Because now I have a tropical theme in my kitchen to honor Blanche's boudoir. But I will put that on the list. But where can people find you? Do you want to be found?
Sure. My company is called WACK Publications. So WHACK. If you Google my name and WACK, all my stuff will come up. Some of the boring tech and healthcare stuff. But, you know, also just my website and other things that I've done. Follow me on Instagram. I'm an oil painter also, so I usually just post what I'm working on in oil paintings. Actually, I'm working on a painting of the Golden Girls now. And, you know, speaking of Dorothy, when you start painting her as a portrait, I mean, she really has some stunning features, you know, nice high cheekbones. They drag everybody up. You know, it's quite a beat they all have on. So it's fun to be able to sort of get into the, you know, when you paint a portrait, you sort of start to know someone more intimately because you really are staring and working for hours and hours. So, you know, that's probably the most interesting thing there is out there now. And I promise to come back on your podcast when my super secret project is, you know, okay to talk about.
Well, I'm sure this will generate lots of buzz saying it's so secret. And I know what it is, everyone. So, ha. But I didn't know you painted. I used to paint. Used to do a lot of things. But I never painted the Golden Girls. And I've toyed with the idea of starting again. But I'm like, I can only do so much. I'm already trying to write, so I don't know. But I originally was going to school to be an art teacher. And speaking of intimacy, that's when I was like, maybe this is a bit much, because we're drawing the nude artist, but then he was getting up and walking around nude and like coming up to everybody like, oh, what are you drawing there? And it's like, this is a little intimate for me. So I was like, maybe this is not the career path. But this WAC Publishing, is this a publishing company that you own?
Uh-huh, WAC Publications. I am a writer. I ghostwrite for people. I produce content for people. So really anything that you want to take from an idea into, you know, whether it's an ebook or an actual printed book or, you know, it's content for your own website. I work with a lot of CEOs and things, who people who have ideas, but maybe not the ability or the time to turn it, you know, from, hey, I have this expertise, into a book. So I have just a handful of clients at a time, but it's nice to be able to choose my own hours. I could take a break during the day to do a podcast. And I really like being my own boss. I wish that for everyone. Honestly, it's the best.
What are the benefits of going through a publisher versus self-publishing?
Time is a big one. I have worked with publishers where you create the content, you hand it over to them, and then it's just TikTok, you know, could be a year, could be 2 years, and they really own it all, have it all, and you kind of just have to be done with it. Whereas when I produce a book for a client, we write it, we publish it, we put it on Amazon, and it's for sale the next day. You know, I started in journalism, so this is just sort of a conglomeration of all of my skills, because as newspapers got smaller, you just learned more jobs. So I went from writing to layout and design to, you know, pagination of pages to, you know, photography. So I kind of know how to do all of it. And it's nice, you know, on one hand to sort of have that control, but it's also nice to just be able to hand something over to an editor and then it's their problem. You know, sometimes it's, you know, you can get very close to your work and start to feel too personal. Sometimes it's nice to just hand that off to someone and just let it be, you know, let them handle the marketing and production. But publishing is so much different than it used to be. You used to get an advance on a book. You would get an advance and then you'd have the year to write the book. Now it's really like, oh, thank goodness you've written a blog for the last 6 months. Okay, we're going to take that blog and all your content and sort of print it. You know, it's much, much different than it used to be. Residuals aren't really the same anymore. It really is just, you know, you pay for the work that you do in the moment, and then that's kind of it. You know, pros and cons.
I'll have to look you up. Since you write about tech, you probably wrote about my job. So I'm interested.
Oh, interesting. I like how you guys are always like, I won't mention where I work. So I'm always wondering where you work.
Well, I'll tell you and then bleep it out so they can really feel left out.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so I wield a lot of power, and I can't wait until I stop working there so I can write my tell-all book. Although I probably will get sued because I have to sign a lot of stuff when I start it. So maybe that's what publishers are for, to read that. Now, one more thing I'm trying to remember, because now it's driving me crazy. Did you have a little girl with you when you came to the booth?
Just on my own. Oh. I came on, what they call it, Dorothy's Sad Friday or something. Mm.
I was so convinced. I was like, ah, that's who it was. Nope, it wasn't. What did you buy?
I bought a lovely Alfred Dunner top. It was black with flowers on it, and it's got a little bow that you can kind of tie in the front. And then this black dress with sort of purple and turquoise color blocking.
So I remember you now. I don't remember your face, but I remember our interaction from that. Okay, I loved that dress. I had no use for it. I had it for probably since like 2006 or something. And I was like, oh, this is cute. Maybe I'll wear it in a video or something. So I'm glad it has a new home.
Oh, best money I've ever spent. In fact, I went to Florida on vacation the week after Golden Con. So I bought my entire, like I was saying, my entire summer wardrobe. I bought this kimono there, some earrings. I looked amazing down in St. Augustine.
Well, if you ever are in the market for more, feel free to swing by. But thank you so much for joining us. or me, I should say.
Shout out to Kay. Congratulations on having a baby in your car. Oh my God.
Oh yeah, I forgot she did have him in the car.
Impressive. She's a really, what I miss about Kay not being here is somebody saying something ignorant and her going,
Is she that transparent?
Oh, I love it. It's so good.
Let me see. Did she text me? Because I was like, are you going to be joining today? Because a big issue for those of you that might be wondering why she's not around, a big problem for us is trying to schedule sometimes. And I was like, look, if we have somebody that's coming on, let's just schedule it. If you can make it, you can make it. If you can't, you can't. Just so we're not holding it up. Because I got people in queue that I'm like, oh, I'll get back to you. You know, I'm like, oh, let me see when she's available, blah, blah, blah. And it's holding stuff up. And I'm like, we can just knock these out. So she is not leaving the show that I know of. She's going to still be on when it's just the two of us, you know, doing an episode review. And if she's available, she'll be on for the interviews. But we got to get things going. I can't wait all day for her. So no offense for anyone that is a Kay lover and you're stuck with me. I'm sorry. But thank you for joining.
I will say I actually love the episodes that you and Kay do together because I feel like it, you know, you talk about the Golden Girls, but it really gets deeper. And I there's so much just interesting cultural, social stuff that you guys talk about that, you know, sometimes I'm like, ooh, a guest pass. So,
well, good to know because I'm like, what if they don't like this person? What if they don't know who they are? Maybe we should toss it up more because for a minute it was like guest. So I was like, okay, maybe we can sprinkle it in because we don't have a format really like the other ones. We're not going episode by episode. So I'm trying to like, you know, give some variety for some people. But good to know that you don't mind when we get on our tangents because I'm like, they did not sign up to hear about all this social justice. They just want to hear about the Golden Girls. And here we are on our Black Lives
Matter. No. I think it's great when it gets deeper than that, for real.
Well, now, whenever we do that, I'm going to say, well, Michelle likes it. And that'll just be what it is. But
that's right. WAC Publications stamp of approval.
Period. So thank you for listening, everyone. And as Michelle and I always say, thank you for being a friend. All right. If you love this podcast, and I mean love this podcast, follow us on all social media, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, we're everywhere. And make sure to give us a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen. And be sure to check out the So Good We Named It Etsy. And catch us live at the Golden Girls Kitchen in Chicago, June 21st and July 19th from 6:30 to 8:30. And you could end up on the show. And as always, thank you for listening and thank you for being a friend.
Hello.
Oh, hi, Kay.
Hi.
We missed you today.
Yeah, it was weak.
Me and Michelle. You know, good old Michelle.
Oh, yeah, love her. Yeah, love her.
She's the best, isn't she?
Love her.
So, previously on So Good We Named It, so you don't even have to listen to the episode, we talked about Winifred Hervey, who's a black woman that wrote on The Golden Girls, and she does not get enough features.
No, she does not.
And what else do we talk about? A lot of the episodes that she wrote were about Dorothy and her family. And we talked about the challenges of raising children with your ex. Is that anything you have any experience with?
You being funny?
I know the answer, but I don't want to put you on Front Street. So I'm posing the question if you would like to answer on how that may be challenging.
Oh, okay. Well, I do know a little bit about that area. Since everybody knows, well, maybe everybody doesn't know. Did I announce on the show that I got divorced?
I don't know. You talk about your next husband. I don't know. I think you always were saying you were divorced anyway.
And then it was
official.
Yeah. My ex-husband refused to sign the papers that I presented, the divorce papers that I presented with him with years ago when we initially separated, only for him to sign the exact same papers years later, which just proves that he's...
Manipulation.
Basically. So, if you didn't know, this is going to sound so ghetto.
I mean, hell, Dorothy was a teen mom. So, you know.
I mean, yeah, but Dorothy had all her kids with Stan.
True.
I didn't have all my kids with Stan. My oldest child that I had first, her, my first ex-husband, He's cool. We have a wonderful co-parenting relationship. We communicate well. We hang out together with our child occasionally, you know, like just for her to see us all together in the same space.
What the hell?
What the hell you got going on? Who is that? The cat jumping around? Is that Simon?
That's Angela. I got her a catnip ball on Temu. And she's a crackhead. She gets so excited. Even if it's just some vapor rub, she's going crazy. Don't mind her. Go on.
A little Bengay on the knees.
a little DP on my neck.
Trying to pick yourself to be 100. so he's a joy to parent with.
Is
Maybe
he?
Not joy.
That's yeah,
not the
that, that's
one.
A little generous.
He's a...
He's all right.
What's the word? I mean, he cool, though. Like,
I've never met him. Cool. I don't know. I never met that one.
No, you never met him. He's cool. He cool, though. Like, he cool. Not cool enough, like, that we have anything going on, that type of cool. But as far as, like, a co-parent, he's an awesome co-parent.
He does what he's supposed to do.
I don't have a problem with him. He does what he's supposed to do and more.
Amen.
So, I appreciate him. Praise God. But my ex-husband, he's Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's
Gurkaga knocking.
Okay, he's something else. He is something else. So it is very challenging at times when you don't have a parent that, and mind you, this is my ex-husband of 11 years. So I don't understand, you know, I do understand, but that's not everybody's business. It's just, it just behooves me that, you know, this is how they're acting, but this is why I didn't want to be with them for, you know, whatever. But yes, I have experience in this area.
You can't trust them. You can't trust them.
You can't trust them. Okay, listen.
You better than me. I would have aired him out. I would have been on America's Most Wanted somewhere.
I am a peaceful person. You know what I mean?
Yeah, me too.
Like, if I have to, sure, Jan, if I have to, you know, get physical, we can absolutely do that. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm going to back down from being challenged. However, I try to take the high road because I'm older now. And I don't have time to be.
Nice.
I ain't even going to say fighting people because I don't fight. I have a firearm that I'm legally allowed to carry in my state. So I don't have time because if I have to pull my gun out, I
take the high road too because I'm typically high. But all he would see is my headlights. And the next thing you know, he's a hood ornament. But
okay,
but
listen.
That's just me. And if anybody's listening, this is a skit.
This is a skit. We are practicing for our new Broadway show.
Because we don't want to be indicted when he come up missing. Like, hey, they were talking about this shit on the show. But
no, I don't have anything to do with that.
I mean, we don't have any children right now. And I like my husband right now. I'm sure you liked yours at some point. But I could not imagine... Like, even my ex, I don't hate him or nothing. We talk here. I cannot imagine having to be stuck with somebody that I cannot stand for at least 18 years, perhaps more, and trying to co-parent. I could not.
But you know what? I'm past the point where I hate him. I just know that he's an idiot. And I enter all our conversations and interactions in the forefront of my mind, knowing that he does not have common sense, kindness, or courtesy. So as long as I remember that, I don't allow anybody. I do my best not to allow people to piss me off or let other people control my mood and emotions. So I go into every conversation remembering that he does not have common courtesy, kindness, or control over himself. And it's when you know that, just like for
he's incontinent.
Yeah, or we could be.
Oh.
Like, for example, if your little baby is trying to walk or something, you're going to have patience with that little baby. You're not going to lash out at that baby because the baby's trying to walk. Or if the baby's trying to learn how to drink out of a cup, if it spills it, you're not going to yell at that baby because it's a baby. You know what I mean? Like, you know, this is all it's capable of. So why am I getting mad at this little baby? I know that that's all he's capable of. So I don't have time. You know, it's just what it is. But that took a lot of self-work.
That's real blessed, because all I'm capable of is full custody. You'll never see his children again. But
even that would be a battle within it in and of itself, because they're the type of, first of all, they're a narcissist. So they're the type of person that will do everything in their power to make it seem like I don't need my kids and they need them more to to get the kids, if in fact a judge was to give him the kids, and not even look at them. So
is he non-binary now? You keep saying they. Am I sister?
I call everybody they.
Just to be on the safe side.
I call everybody they and them.
Oh.
That's a lie. I call men or my exes they them. I don't even give them the. I don't say he because that's not what a man does. You're a they them.
Sounds problematic, but okay. But I feel you. And in terms of Dorothy, I cannot imagine having to deal with Stanley for my entire life. Like, their children are grown. Why are you at my house? What do you mean?
She liked him. They almost got back together like 3 months.
But in the first couple seasons, she couldn't stand him, and he was always popping up. And the first time she saw him after the divorce was at Kate's wedding, and she was about to flip out then.
First of all, for her to hate him as much as she alleged that she hated him in the first couple of seasons, they sure left the door open and opened the door for him to come in. You can't come in here unannounced too, please.
Well, and then Sophia had them taking care of him, and she's like, you do for family. You got children with this man. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck.
I don't care. That's my ex-husband. Like, we could be cool, but I don't have to cater to you and help you through. You're my ex-husband. Like, knock it off.
Right. Go to the VA hospital. Although, okay, maybe he wouldn't qualify because he told them to paint his nails when they were invading Korea, paint his toenails.
I think that's with ex-husbands that you don't like and can't stand. Because with Andre being the love of my life, if it weren't to work out with us, between him and I, he is literally my best friend. So, like, I can still see me doing certain things for him because I genuinely like them. And they are a great person. They treat me well.
Yes, they are.
But I can't see myself doing anything for my ex-husband because, please, I can't. Spare me.
That's what I say. Like, I always tell Manny that I would still want to be friends, and he's like, no. I don't believe in it.
Like, if we cool, like, if we didn't break up on no... On
he
no,
said he doesn't believe in being friends with exes, so...
I do if it just don't work out. Like,
that's what I said.
You know, no scandalous shit. Like, for example, why me and my husband broke up, it was because I realized we were going through a perpetual cycle and he was a narcissist. So I don't want to be married to you, but we still could have been cool because we got kids together. You know what I'm saying? Like, we still could have been cool because we got kids
That's
together.
What I mean. If we like each other as individuals and no crazy shit goes down, why can't we still hang out? So I told him, I'm still going to be friends with your friends. You're going to see me, so you better just deal with it.
Because as long as it ain't no wild shit, why can't you be friends? I would have loved to have still been friends with my ex-husband, but he's an idiot, so that ship has sailed.
I mean, sometimes you might need them for something. That's why I'm cool with my ex. He's a dentist. I might need a crown or something. So, you know, you never know. But,
Does he do veneers?
Well, he's a pediatric dentist, but it's the same, right? Just bigger teeth.
I want some veneers. He don't do cosmetic.
Why do you want veneers? So you can look like you got some fucking dentures in your mouth? Chompers?
I want porcelain veneers. Porcelain veneers look like teeth.
Okay, get those, because the ones everybody else has and some of the people we mutually know have.
Listen to me. I'm like, why did I get them?
Take a bite out of crime.
Instagram, they kept them off Instagram.
Mm-mm, no, ma'am, Pam.
I'm copying veneers.
I'm good on that. But yeah, it was a cute little show today. Hate you missed it, but you know, you'll get in on the next one. But we had to take a break. We had to take a break, honey. Once again, I volunteered for this program at work. It only fit to fuck my life up. I enjoy it.
Too much.
I enjoy it. It is very nice to be able to, you know, mentor and help people. It's just the schedule is so different and the demand that it puts on me is so different that I just...
Yeah.
It's hard to do anything. So I haven't been on social media the past week. Okay. I can't do nothing. I had to take a break.
I know that's hard.
But we're back and better than ever. And we will be at the Golden Girls Kitchen on July 19th in Chicago. There's no food. But it'll be $5 because there's no food.
And they're serving cheesecake and the bar is open.
Right. So, and you'll be able to see us. So buy those tickets so you can come and see us. If nobody shows up and we are talking to ourselves, I'm going to be a little salty. But nobody's going to know because I will Photoshop people into it if I post
pictures.
Okay,
period. And we should go live.
if somebody wants to have that responsibility, maybe Johanna. But you can also get some of these Golden Girl stickers and candles. Because once this sells, I ain't making any more. I'm not making any more.
You quit?
Maybe I'll make them as they're being ordered, perhaps, if they order a large quantity. But this was a lot of work, and I still have quite a few of them. So I don't know if the prices are going to drop, but we'll see. But yeah, we got a lot happening. I don't know what are we going to do next, because we don't have anything else planned. I don't know if there's another Golden Con yet, but you know, we need to do something. We always have like an upcoming gig.
Let's throw an event ourselves.
Yeah, as they don't come to that shit, and I'll be mad. We'll host it at the Woofies on Peterson Avenue.
Exactly. At the Rusty Anchor.
Well, the Woofies actually exist. I don't know if there's a real Rusty Anchor anywhere around. But yeah, that's what's going on over here. Stay tuned. There's lots more to come. And yeah.
And as we always say,
we already did that part.
Damn, we did.
Me and Michelle did.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep. It's like that. Dang, why the dog? I walked away from the dog and these animals because they're loud. And they come in here. She's coughing all in the computer. All this. And she wouldn't even wear the wig that I got her. She doesn't like it.
Oh, not wear the wig. Why are you putting a wig on her?
I got a pet wig off Temu.
What?
And I got some sunglasses for the cat. They didn't like that either. I gotta stay off of there. I really do.
Eddie and Timo, you need to stop.
Shopping with Eddie. When I have my edible.
Please send me a picture.
I'm gonna send it to you now. She look like somebody's grandmama.
What made you buy a pet wig? Like, why because would you buy that?
It popped. I didn't go looking for it.
But even when it popped up, like, what made you be like, you know what? I'm gonna get Angela or Bernice a wig.
Because I thought it would be cute and they would like it. She didn't. Not a fan. I didn't post it because the wig looks photoshopped on her head.
Let me see.
I did add a little bit to the background here. I sent it because she looks like somebody's auntie.
Oh, Lord, wait a minute. Let me see. Hold on. Let me
find. I thought it was cute, Lord, though. Doesn't she look cute? I like it.
Why you got this fucking wig on, Peanut?
I want to give her a new cut, a new color, a new hairdo. Some curls for the girls.
Ooh, it looked like she just broke up with her baby daddy. Like, ooh, shit. Ooh,
but it was
that's hilarious.
That was a waste of my money, Cleo. Oh, she just walked out the room. I guess she didn't appreciate you laughing.
Like,
them
the girls would be like, new hair, new me, and it looks terrible.
Instagram saw it first.
Ooh, I look like she got her head done. It's somebody's kitchen downstairs.
That's why I gave her this background with this grandma couch, and I gave her a Jet magazine. But my husband is texting me, asking me, am I still bringing him his food? I guess that's all he cares about.
Damn. Tell Manny.
He did do the dishes and take the garbage out, so I guess I can bring him his food, I suppose. But I told him, I was like, yeah, I'm about to bring it, and then I got on the phone with you. So he's like, you still bringing that?
Okay.
Wow.
Well, make sure you feed Emmanuel so he can be well-nourished.
Emmanuel. He doesn't like that. I'm not doing this. He's not a fan.
I know. That's why I've never called him that to his face. Never.
But, yeah, that's what's going on. And stay tuned. And I will see you at the Golden Girls Kitchen. Go to Bucket Listers for more information.
I hate your announcer voice. Why is that your announcer voice?
I don't know. I think my edible is kicking in.
Oh, let's make it quick.
Peanut, I like your fur. Is this real?
Oh, my God.
Okay, well, I'll talk to you later. And... stay golden.